This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
It is 7:43. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. This morning's Israel Report is with Ariel Whitman. He's the op-ed editor and a senior reporter at Globes. He's also the host of the Western Spirit podcast. He has joined us before on Chai FM. Ariel, good morning. I'm hoping that you
good
are
morning,
well.
Howard.
I'm hoping you're good. Because it hasn't been, well, I guess no week in Israel is an easy week, but yesterday was a particularly difficult day once again. Can you take us through some of the incidents that took place yesterday?
Yes, so in the early afternoon in Allenby checking point, which connected the Jordan to Israel, a Jordanian truck driver, that's what we know now, with the leading investigative direction, was driving a truck full of aid to Gaza, coming in from Jordan through Israel and down to Gaza. At the checking point, he got out, he was shot at the soldiers at the checkpoint, and when his gun had malfunctioned, he came out with a knife and stabbed them, killing two reservist soldiers. And the sad thing about this whole tragic situation was that one of the soldiers was a 60-year-old reservist. And at that age, obviously, you don't really need to come. You don't have to come. And this guy was volunteering. And his son and the husband
Ariel,
of his
we're
daughter.
Having Ariel, the line is not a great one. Is there anything you can do on your side just to... are you hearing us as clearly? I'm just worried.
No, I'm also hearing you not too clearly.
I'm just wondering if it's a mic. You know what we're going to... Well, let's carry on and let's hope that it settles. Sorry, carry on where you were.
So tell me if you have any problems hearing, and I'll try to make it say it louder. So he was... this guy was a 60-year-old reservist who was volunteering there. His son and the person who married his daughter were both reservists there. They ran to the scene not knowing that their family member was the victim, and they found him basically dead. He was pronounced dead at the scene. Another younger guy, soldier, was also killed. And then a few hours later, we received news of four soldiers that were killed in Gaza in the Rafah area. Armored vehicle drove on top of a IED and exploded, and they all died, which is interesting in the fact where it happened. It's in an area where the Israeli army says that they have full control of for the past 5-6 months already. But when asked why this was happening in an area that the army supposedly controls for so long, the response has been that you can never 100% clear all the tunnels, and this was probably terrorists that came in through a tunnel, put the explosives there and ran away. So they're still investigating it, but one of the soldiers was someone who got married 2 months ago and now passed away. And I know another one who my friend's cousin was one of the soldiers. So it's every time we talk about it, I feel like this is again and again, but these people are coming, just the reservists are coming of their own free will, basically, at this point, and willing to put their lives on the line for the Jewish state and the people here. And it's truly amazing that people continue to come. They're being called up 7-8 times already, and they're dying, losing limbs. And it's my hat. I just tip my hat and bow down to them. You know, it's unbelievable.
It really is just horrific and unbelievable, because they still turn up And there has to be a level of exhaustion, not just from the soldiers, the reservists, their families, the businesses that they're involved with. How is Israel actually managing this? It's phenomenal.
Yeah. It's will we have I don't want to, get people depressed. You open the can of worms here, but
Sorry.
Israeli society is really fractured in the past, I'll say 8 months. I think it started maybe in the past year. You've had a significant rise in the number of soldiers who have tried to put an end to their lives. You've had the soldiers being, put into psychiatric wards of what they've been going through. We've had yesterday a story about five Golani soldiers. I was in Golani when I was a healthy young man. So five Golani soldiers that said that they refused to go back into Gaza for this operation, and they were put into jail. But I think it does indicate that something is very. It's difficult. It's 2 years. Israel does not have a lot of soldiers. Just speaking frankly, we have a small army, even with the reserves. And so every soldier, the weight of the operation on his hands is unbelievably tough and difficult, and it's wearing people out. And in terms of Israeli society at large, not just the soldiers, people have had enough. And we are looking at just fatigue. And the problem is that how do you end it? Everyone wants to end it. Everyone wants to go back to our lives that we had before October 7th. We want to, get the economy started again. We want to get people back to work. We want to get the reservists back to their businesses that are crumbling. We want to the world not to put all these sanctions that they're putting on us. And so the question, but on the other hand, you can't end it with Hamas in power and the hostages still in Gaza. And so we're in a very in a conundrum now, because we need to put the pressure on Hamas in order for them to either release the hostages or, surrender. But on the other hand, we are really reeling in Israel. We're really, it's really, really tough.
Yeah,
You know,
it's,
I'll just give you an example, Howard.
right.
I have friends who are going to be, this is their 400th day in reserves in the last 2 years. So out of 600 plus days in 2 years, they've been most of the time not with their families. They have little children that don't even know pretty much how their father looks like, because the children were born when the
Because
father was in
two
reserve.
years is a significant period in a child's life,
Yeah.
and dad is, the father's not home.
And Rosh Hashanah is coming, the new year, and these people are not going to be in their homes with their families for Rosh Hashanah. I have friends with four or five children. The children will be with their mothers without a father at the table. And so even when we talk about debt, it's not just the people who are tragically dying. It's the entire country that's reeling in, psychological more than even physical at this point.
I wonder how, and maybe it is, well, I don't know if it is too early, because a lot of people that I spoke to would say, well, you can't deal with trauma in the middle of an event. You've got to wait until afterwards. But 2 years is a significant amount of time, as you've alluded to, where people are suffering and families are suffering. There's physical, there's physical, there's economic, there's domestic family relationships. There's so many things. How does a nation recover from this when it's all over?
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I think we're going to have a traumatic generation. Just like after the Yom Kippur War, if for people who are old enough to remember, but I'm not, but what I've been told is that after the Yom Kippur War, there was a significant PTSD problem in Israel, post-traumatic stress disorder, where people were really, walking around like zombies here in Israel. And at the time, there this just the medicine wasn't.
Well, there wasn't
No
even,
one knew
there
really
probably
what it
wasn't even
was.
recognition of this concept of
Exactly. No
PTSD.
one knew what it was. Like,
Yes.
I have family members from that time that have been, their lives were certain. They still are not back to where they were 50 years ago, 60 years ago. And so we're going to look at a generation, what's called, people are calling it the lost generation in terms of their psychological well-being, of young men who have gone to war, been in war for so long, seen the worst types of things you can see, coming back. and it's thousands of people, and they're going to be building the next generation of Israel. They're going to be the leaders, they're going to be the businessmen, they're entrepreneurs, and all this kind of stuff. And so we're looking at the government has put tons of money, and probably not enough, into trying to handle the situation in terms of getting psychologists into the field, letting soldiers, when they come out of Gaza, speak with therapists to try to process what's happening. But I'm not sure that it's enough. It's just war is horrible. People don't, people, I think, outside of the field don't really understand to the fullest extent of what a soldier has to go through for so many days in such a harrowing battlefield. And it's not like, it's not even a regular battlefield, as we know. It's urban warfare. So you're going and seeing the worst types of atrocities that Hamas is doing, and you're seeing the worst, your friends being killed in front of you. And this is, has lasting effects, which we still don't, I don't think we understand it, and we'll see it over time.
What must add to this is the growing isolation, where we see
Exactly.
day after day the behavior or the announcements by people like countries like Spain, France, the Netherlands. I mean, even something as ridiculous as Eurovision suddenly takes on significance. That has got to make it significantly worse for people who are already enduring a very difficult environment.
Yeah, I think in general we feel ever since October 7th, there's this myth that after October 7th, everyone was pro-Israel and supportive of us. And then only when Israel did the bad things, in quotation marks, that it's done since then they all started isolating us and being against us. And I think that's just not true. I think when you look at, Western countries, they all said, okay, we're against the killing them. But we pull on both sides to be restrained. That was the basic tenor of the posture of the West, and obviously of our neighbors here in the Middle East. And so when you look at what's happening around the world, I think there's two things going on. Number one, in terms of Israeli society, we do feel isolated. We feel alone. I think most people here feel very angry at the world that they don't understand. We're very frustrated. I mean, and I think this pretty much goes down the political spectrum, whether you support Netanyahu or not. You feel that the world doesn't understand, or it's a purposefully not understanding. And when I look at my friends in the UK and in Spain and all these other places, you have pretty much leftist governments who have to placate to a Muslim voting bloc, and they're not popular, and they're using Israel as a stick to say, we are with you on this issue, the Palestine issue, in order so that they can, stay on in power. And we feel like we're being used in internal politics in a way that's hurting us physically, because like Netanyahu said yesterday, that Israel has a problem with getting certain types of weapons right now. And so soldiers in the field might have less of a protection or ability to fight because certain countries have put weapons embargoes on us. And this is really, really a dangerous situation. Israel's going to have to, and the prime minister talked about this, and other ministers, and even the army, Zamir, the head of the army, said, we're going to have to learn from this and make significant factories in Israel that will produce certain weapons, like mortar shells. I don't know if people know about this, but when Israel first went into Rafah about a year and a half ago, the US put an embargo on even some sort of mortars.
I
And so some
remember.
of the tanks that were going into Gaza did not have fully operating capabilities. So they were being told to shoot at certain areas, and they had to judiciously sort of, so to speak, decide whether they wanted to waste the mortar on that area. And so Israel has to take all this into account, and it has not only psychological effects, but definitely security effects. And this is a really dangerous time.
It really is. Now I want to ask you, because we've only got 2 more minutes. Rosh Hashanah is coming up. It's the end of another difficult year for all the reasons we've spoken about. What are the things that we look forward to, we hope for, we pray for, and we see happening in the next year?
So I'll just give a little bit of an anecdote. I interviewed the billionaire Bill Ackman about a week ago, and you speak inside Israel. It's very easy to get depressed. It's very easy to think everyone's against you. It's very easy to get bogged down in the day-to-day of the war, of the media just pouring on this hatred on us, and then you meet someone who's well connected to the U.S. administration, who's well connected to American business and an entrepreneur, and he decides in the middle of the war to buy about 5% of the Israeli stock exchange, and he made about I think three times his investment in 1 year, which is a lot of money. And he said that it was his best investment pretty much in his entire life. That I did it because I support Israel, but it turned out it was also very lucrative for me. And I asked him, like, are you optimistic about the Israeli economy? What do you think about Israel at large? And he said, it's very easy to get bogged down in the weeds about the situation right now. But if I look 2, 3, 4, 5 months ahead of us, I'm extremely optimistic. He said, for example, the Israeli economy will be unleashed once the war stops, and so people will start investing again. He said he thinks that the Abraham Accords will be, more countries will join. He was very optimistic.
That's
And
amazing.
when you think about it, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. The Jewish people have, we've been through this before, and we always come out stronger pretty much. And so I think that there's so much reasons to be optimistic when you took your hat. Take your head a little bit above the sea level, when you look a little bit farther ahead. And so I'm optimistic. I have a family here in Israel. If I wasn't optimistic, I wouldn't be here. I have three little children. And so looking at my family, and my extended family that's here, I'm an American citizen. I could leave any day, and I'm not going to leave because I love my homeland, and I'm very optimistic about our future.
Ariel Whitman, thank you for that. Wishing you, your family, all of Israel, the soldiers, the hostages, everybody, a peaceful, restorative year ahead. A Shana Tova to you.
That Israel report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.